and a new week of Talking About the South has arrived. Hello, I'm John Rawl, the General of the South, well, at least of all things Southern, and we appreciate you joining me here for this Monday edition of the show that shakes the Southland. Got a very, very exciting way to get the week started here as we're well past the halfway point of the month of July, and we hope y'all had a great weekend. I think for the most part, the South got off easy weather-wise, and hopefully you were able to take advantage of that and oh so much more. If you want to get in touch with us here at the Y'all Show, it's easy to do. Our email address, mailmail@y'all.com, or if you want to text us, we've got our 24-hour-a-day text line that is always open and available for you. That's 615-208-4184. Would love to get your feedback here on the Y'all Show. And as I said, we've got a busy show today as we're inching our way to the month of August here in a couple of weeks. Kiddies, alert, alert. Enjoy these last few days of summertime if you've got school starting back in the near future, which most of you will be going back. I was around some youngins this past weekend, and I think I heard the little girl yell out. She held up the number five the five fingers on her hand when someone asked you, when do you go back to school? And she put up the five, meaning she's going back August 5th. Someone I know is going back August 3rd. Oh, it's tough out there for these youngsters. We've got a lot of fun coming up on today's Y'all Show. We've got headlines from across the Southeast, including Sunday, a shootout for the Hampton, Georgia guy that was accused of killing four. He was shot and killed himself. We'll have information coming in on the Peach State with this awful, awful situation that developed in Georgia over the weekend. Plus, also, we'll let you know how, in our headlines across the Southeast, five people were shot in Bladensburg, Maryland over the weekend near the Peace Cross Memorial. What's that all about? They were shot while leaving a funeral in Maryland over the weekend. Elsewhere in our news headlines today, we'll let you know about how in the Middle Tennessee portion of our region, that in Columbia, Tennessee, they recently arrested at least, I think, the one man and possibly the teenager involved with handing out KKK flyers. We told you about that last week. Arrests have been made. I'll let you know about what's going on in Murray County, Tennessee on that. Also, speaking of Middle Tennessee news, Jason Aldean, the country singer out of Georgia, he had to go get help over the weekend as he had a heat stroke while performing. We'll fill you in on the latest from Jason Aldean. Plus, if you're going to Alabama this year, trying to sneak in a beach trip to the heart of Dixie before the summer's up, and you've got a dog, I'll let you know what's the most dog-friendly beach in the heart of Dixie. All that coming up here. Oh, I got to tell you, this is crazy too. We'll mix in our headlines today. I know you might want to sign up for this. We've got information how you can sign up to be the mullet champion. Believe it or not, there's a very, very professional organization that puts on mullet championships all the time, both the kind that you show up to and compete in person, and then they got all digital mullet contest where you compete with people from all over the world. They have mullet contests for kids. They got them for women. How would you like to be a woman that won the mullet contest? I'll let you know all about that in our headlines today, only in the South. And of course, we'll fill you in on how you could sign up too, if that's something you've got as a life goal to win a mullet championship. Business in the front, party in the back. We have our sports update coming today. We've got the SEC media's days kicking off today in Nashville. I will give you the scoop courtesy of AL.com of what to be looking for on day one of SEC media days. Got a lot of tennis to talk about. Wimbledon came to an end over the weekend. We had some surprises there on the grass in England. We'll fill you in on the Wimbledon winners as well as also across the pond. Rory McIlroy Sunday picked up a championship of his own as he won the Scottish Open. The Northern Irish golfer, winning in Scotland, I think for the first time. So congratulations to Rory. This week, it's the Open Championship of Golf, and we'll get our buddy Jason Nall to join us later in the week to help us preview the last major in golf of the year. So we'll have all that packaged in our update on sports, plus we've got some other college football news and notes sandwiched in between the other coverage of our Southern sports. Also, in this hour of the Y'all Show, we've got hashtag HuddleBlue, and we're going to have a lot of fun on that one today because we've got someone out here on social media that has broken down the various accents of the country. I'm focusing more on the South, and they've got at least three major accent variations for the Southeast, and I'm going to walk through them, and I've got some audio queued up, and I'm going to let you hear some great examples of these various accents this person identifies for our region. So that's going to be fun. Here on the Y'all Show, we're going to get extra y'all in our first hour, giving you a report on accents and the styles of accents. That's coming up here, hour number one. Hour number two today, it's our Southern History Spotlight. And this is going to be a little personal for me because it was this week in 1863 that the Battle of Battery Wagner happened. And that was in Charleston, South Carolina, just off of Charleston, over there near Folly Beach, present day. Battery Wagner was the setting for the movie Glory that came out in 1989. That's got Denzel Washington in there. And a whole bunch of other really big stars. I think, Matthew Broderick's got the main role. And that scene was that Battery Wagner was the final scene of that movie Glory. A true classic when it comes to Civil War movies. In fact, I saw that movie in the theater when it came out, and I saw it probably within 3 miles of where Battery Wagner was located. I was over there on the way to Folly Beach off of, somewhere on James Island was where the movie theater was that I saw it. But today in history, Battery Wagner happened, and I had two grandfathers that fought at Battery Wagner and survived that battle. And I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that battle and its importance and the role that Privates Rawl and Kaminer had as they survived that terrible battle. They were Confederates fighting there to defend Battery Wagner in 1860. I think it's 1863. It could be 1864. We'll tell you about it in our Southern History Spotlight. A lot of Civil War news coming up on today's Spotlight, and we love talking military history and certainly don't have any problem talking about Confederate Civil War history more. The Second Battle of Fort Wagner, 1863, I was right, came just a couple of weeks after Gettysburg and Vicksburg fell for the South. Also, in this week's Southern history, we will tell you about the Apollo 11 landing that happened where man walked on the moon in 1969. That happened this week. We'll fill you in on that, plus a couple of people from the South having big birthdays. One of those, Maryland native David Hasselhoff. Happy birthday, David Hasselhoff, as he turns 71 today. David Michael Hasselhoff, born in Baltimore in 1952. So we'll give you a little bit more info on Mr. Hasselhoff and our Southern history, our spotlight today. We also have in our second hour our Southern recipe of the day, and I actually got invited, believe it or not, to a church picnic, and it's not even my church. I just sometimes go to this church when I'm visiting, and they invited me out to their church picnic they have every year, and I went out there. Lovely time. I'll fill you in more about it in hour two. But it wasn't until I went to the recap of the church picnic Sunday, which would be church, and the pastor there in church was certainly thanking people for showing up at the picnic the day before. And one of the things the pastor pointed out was the incredible hamburgers that were served up there. I did not even catch this, but the pastor in church was talking about hamburgers. Not exactly what I expected to be hearing up there in the pulpit, but I'm okay with it. It was at the beginning of the service. And Pastor Presley specifically mentioned how the hamburgers were bathed, after they were cooked, they were bathed in a kind of beef broth. And I'd never heard of that. And he said how wonderful it was, and he's going to try that again himself. So I didn't even pick up on it after I devoured the burgers Saturday. But now that the preacher brought it up Sunday, call it divine intervention, I think I'm going to have to tell y'all more about how you can take your cooked hamburger and put it in some kind of beef broth and make that delicious burger more delicious, perhaps. We've got a recipe that we'll be sharing with you as part of our Southern recipe of the day. We'll have that in hour two. Hour three today, Megan Hedwall is going to be back. Yes. In fact, she's coming back today because she's going to be out for several days. And you know what? We're going to have some fun with Megan. Bless her heart. She's going up north for vacation, her summer vacation. She's going to Michigan. And we can't have that. We can't let her go there without giving her a hard time. So our staff here at the Y'all Show is trying to keep Megan Hedwall from going north for a week and a half, I think it is. She'll be back here co-hosting in 2 weeks. So as a fun way to stop her from going and maybe have her reevaluate her vacation plans, we're going to talk to Megan about how she can enjoy a Michigan vacation right here in the South. And what does that look like? I'll tell you, we've got some great places that she can go to, and she never has to cross that Ohio River. She can go to Detroit. She can go to the capital, or at least a town that's got the name Lansing, and she never has to go up to Yankee Land. We're going to have some fun talking to Megan about this in hour two, plus we've got more sports coming in our final hour when Megan's on here. And Megan will be on in hour three of today's Y'all. So, hey, that sounds like a great show, and I think we better not hold up you all any longer. Let's get into the headlines. Now, Sunday, authorities in Georgia shot and killed a man that was wanted in the weekend killings of four people near Atlanta. A spokesperson with the Henry County, Georgia Sheriff's Department said that the suspect, Andre Longmore, was fatally shot during a widespread search for this 40-year-old man. The manhunt began shortly after the shootings that happened Saturday morning in a subdivision in Hampton, Georgia, that's just south of Atlanta. The law enforcement in that area on Sunday was able to track down Lawmore and shot and killed him in nearby Clayton County, Georgia. And a Henry County Sheriff's deputy and a Clayton County police officer were injured during the attempt to arrest Longmore. This is a developing story, but again, on Saturday, this man is accused, or the suspect who is dead, accused, would be the suspect for a multi-fatality shooting that happened in Georgia over the weekend. And now after a search, two officers hurt in the encounter, but the man that they were looking for has been killed in a shootout in Georgia. Again, more to come on this developing story. Out of Maryland this weekend, five people were shot near the Peace Cross Memorial in Bladensburg. And this happened while people were leaving a nearby funeral, according to the Bladensburg, Maryland Police Department. All the victims are alive, according to the chief of that Bladensburg department, Tyrone Collington Sr. The victims were in critical condition over the weekend. The shooting happened just before lunch, 12:30 lunchtime-ish is when it happened, Friday. And five people were shot, were leaving a funeral at Fort Lincoln Cemetery when at least one person in another vehicle started shooting at their vehicle. And I think this is like the second time we've seen a funeral shooting in Maryland in the last 6 weeks or so. I'm not sure what's going on. And again, this happened in the shadows of the Peace Cross Memorial in Bladensburg, Maryland. Not a lot of peace going on there. Another strange story out of the state of Maryland. In Prince George's County, eight ICU patients at a hospital there had to be relocated to a different wing after a car crashed into the building where they were being housed. Yes, they were in a hospital that a car came crashing into. This happened Sunday morning as the local fire and EMS responded to the Adventist Healthcare Fort Washington Medical Center, a car crashing into a generator in a sub-building detached from the main hospital. Fire officials said that a small fire ended up occurring and was quickly extinguished, but the people there, the patients, who were not hit by the car but ended up having to be relocated again after this car comes crashing into this hospital in Prince George's County, Maryland, on Sunday. Glad that everybody is okay. Update from a story last week. We told you about how someone was passing out in Columbia, Tennessee, KKK flyers. Well, at the end of last week, two people arrested and being accused of posting these Klan flyers at three predominantly black churches in Murray County, Tennessee. The Columbia Police Department has yet to identify the names of the suspects, but a 38-year-old man has been arrested, and along with a 17-year-old, and both are the suspects, it looks like, in this distribution of KKK flyers. And I know the people in the community were really on edge there, but I know some of the citizens, after less than 24 hours of these flyers being distributed, they've got people now under arrest. And that is a good thing for the people of Murray County in Tennessee after these Klan flyers passed out last week. Another Middle Tennessee story, Jason Aldean. He is now recovering after suffering a heat stroke on stage. He was performing way up in Connecticut. That might be his first problem there. Jason performing at the Xfinity Theater in Hartford when the temperatures reached a high of 89 degrees there, and the singer suffered a heat stroke on stage, according to a representative, and he had to cut short his concert. At one time during Aldean's concert there in Hartford, he appeared to be struggling to sing before running off stage. The venue confirmed that the show would be rescheduled to an undetermined date and that Jason Aldean is doing fine. You know, Jason's had a tough time with concerts. It was his concert some 5 years ago out there in Las Vegas that the mass shooting happened. He was on stage singing when that shooter there from the Vegas casino killed more than 50 people at the Route 90 concert, something like that. Stormy Warren, my old coworker, putting that thing on, and just a horrible, horrible thing there for Jason Aldean. Luckily, this was nowhere close to being that tragic over the weekend with him having to sneak off stage due to heat issues, but we wish him well. Jason Aldean in Connecticut having a tough time. It looks like Ice Cube, the famous rapper and actor and cultural icon for some, he's not having a good time in Memphis as he is upset. The former member of NWA speaking out against Memphis's FedEx Forum, and he is mad that this Big Three basketball event took place at the FedEx Forum. Ice Cube going on Twitter a couple of times over the weekend saying, "The FedEx Forum and Ticketmaster should be ashamed of themselves on how they treated the Big Three in Memphis, posting that our games were basically sold out when there's plenty of good seats left." Dirty, Ice Cube puts out there on social media. And then later he puts out another tweet saying, "Thank you, Memphis. We had a great time. FedEx Forum, thanks for nothing." FedEx Forum has not yet responded, at least to some of the outlets that I'm getting this information from, but the Big Three tournament is this summertime deal with basketball. There's like three guys. It's got a people like Ice Cube involved, so there's usually a pretty big crowd, but evidently, at least according to Mr. Cube, he's not happy that the FedEx Forum was essentially letting people know that this thing was sold out when there were plenty of seats, and that's money in his pocket. And he ain't very happy, it sounds like, coming out of Memphis this weekend. Maybe you should have consulted with us here, because we know a little bit more about how to draw a big crowd, because we have a Southern drawl. Get it? Ha, ha, ha. That's a pretty good dad joke. Well, this dad here is having a good time with all y'all listening as we do this each and every day. We call this the Y'all Show. Our website is y'all.com, the ultimate guide to the South. When we come back on Y'all, we're going to switch over and give you an update, not on the Big Three basketball tournament in Memphis, but no, we got real sports to talk about, tennis, golf, and college football. And we'll have that right after this break here, so stay tuned. We want to hear you here at Supertalk 93.1 on shows like The Y'all Show, The Patriot Pastor, and The Frankie Lack Show. We've got a text line that you can text us and participate in the program. That number, 731-410-7560. And the Supertalk 93.1 text line is powered by See Me Tree Service. They are a West Tennessee-based company, and they will help you with any of your tree removal problems, tree trimming, tree elevation, pruning, tree topping, stump grinding, and more. They're a small family-owned business that's licensed and insured, and you can call See Me Tree Service for a free estimate. Call them at 731-617-2236. See Me Tree Service. For all of your tree removal or tree issues going on, give them a call for that free estimate. 731-617-2236. See Me Tree Service, powering the Supertalk 93.1 text line.
On her front porch, I pulled up slinging gravel in my daddy's Ford. She cried all the way to Johnson's store. I kept the motor running and parked by the door. Yeah, I was foolish and wild. She was classic and regal. We were fresh out of school, both barely legal. We were young and on fire and just couldn't wait. 6 weeks in, she was 3 weeks late. One means none, and we're home free. Two means three, and a diamond ring. Yeah, wonder what fate is gonna decide. We're just sitting around waiting on two pink lines. Sitting around waiting on two pink lines.
All right, we're back on Y'all, and a little Southern sports courtesy of England to start things off as Wimbledon, the biggest tennis tournament, I think, in the entire world, wrapped up over the weekend, and we had a little bit of an upset with Carlos Alcaraz out of Spain winning Sunday over Novak Djokovic. He won 1-6, 7-6, 6-1, 3-6, and in the final fifth set, he won 6-4. And that was quite a victory for him because it ended Djokovic, his the 36-year-old Serbian's quest for the calendar Grand Slam in 2023. He nearly pulled it off, but it was a five-set thriller. And the Spaniard Alcaraz winning. He's the world number one, by the way. But a big, big win. The match lasted 4 hours and 42 minutes. The third longest final in Wimbledon history. That was Sunday there. On Saturday, another big match and a big upset there as Markita Vondrousova, she won her match as she beat the world number six in women's tennis, Ons Jabeur. And she's the first unseeded woman to win at Wimbledon in its history. She won 6-4, 6-4, and an impressive, impressive victory for this Czech native. She's 24 years old and ranked 42nd in the world, but the lowest ranked woman to win at the All England Club in the Wimbledon history. And she's the first unseeded woman to reach the final, by the way, in 60 years. And she ended up winning it. Billie Jean King was the last unseeded woman to make the final, but she lost to Margaret Court back in 1963. And Billie Jean King was on hand when Vondrousova won on Saturday. And she was, by the way, Billie Jean, seated between the Princess of Wales and Martina Navratilova. And so we've got a big weekend from Wimbledon. Plus, We'll let you also know it wasn't the men's champion nor the women's champion, but we actually have a junior champion, and this is a champion coming straight out of the South, Orlando, Florida's Clervy Nagvino, I believe is her last name, how you pronounce it. She won the junior singles title at Wimbledon on Sunday. She's 16 years old. She becomes the second straight American to win the girls' single title at the All England Club. So a rising star out of Florida on the court, as she is a 16-year-old Orlando resident. Clervy, that's C-L-E-R-V-I-E. Her last name is spelled N-G-O-U-N-O-U-E. I'm just going to assume she has parents who came to Florida from one of the African countries, is what I'm going to guess here with that name. But a big, big opportunity for her on the grass there in England to pull that off. Now, the grass of Scotland was kind to a Northern Irishman. Rory McIlroy over the weekend won the Genesis Scottish Open, and that is the precursor to this week's Open Championship. Rory roared back as he got birdies on the final two holes, despite the whipping wind there in Gillane, Scotland. He fired a 2-under 68, and that was just one shot better than Robert McIntyre and Rory McIlroy, which this tournament has a few of the PGA stars in it, the Scottish Open. A lot of your PGA guys kind of take this week off in preparation for the Open Championship, but Rory McIlroy, the Scottish Open champion, congratulations to him over the weekend. This week, they take their talent for the Open Championship over to Royal Liverpool, and Roy McIlroy is going to try to end his 9-year drought in majors, as he still has not won the Grand Slam. He's a couple of Grand Slams away. I think he's won an Open. He needs to win, I think, a PGA Championship is the one that he doesn't not have. Oh, he doesn't have a Masters. Maybe he's won a PGA. He hasn't won a Masters. I'm not totally sure what Roy. By the way, Roy's been in the news a lot here lately because of his comments on LIV Golf. And what a bold statement he said the other day, that he would just as soon retire as to be a member of LIV Golf. That's pretty strong. And I have not been the biggest Roy McIlroy fan the last few years because I thought Roy got a little too political. He was very critical of Donald Trump when Trump was president. And why does a guy from Northern Ireland need to be saying anything about our American politics? But he did chime in a little bit during the Trump presidency. And now he's out talking bad about LIV, which I'm okay with LIV, but he's not. But that's his right as an American. Just kidding. I don't think he's an American citizen. But he had the strongest words I've heard about LIV Golf when Roy talked about that the other day. We also will let you know today is the start of SEC Media Days, and that's taking place in Nashville for the first time ever. And the teams that will be up at the mic today, LSU, and LSU will have Jaden Daniels, Josh Williams, and Mika Wingo all representing the Bayou Bengals at day one of SEC Media Days in downtown Nashville. The other Tigers, at least one of the other two Tigers, the Missouri Tigers also at the podium. And you've got Coach Drinkwitz coming down from Como with defensive back Chris Drain, lineman Javon Foster, and Darius Robinson representing Mizzou. Also the third team on this three-day representation of the SEC Media Days is the Texas A&M Aggies. Jimbo Fisher's coming to Nash Vegas. Got a couple of great players joining him. Defensive lineman Fadel Diggs. Also defensive lineman McKinley Jackson. And senior wide receiver Anias Smith. All representing the maroon and white of A&M at SEC Media Days. I'm going to tell you more about what AL.com has to say about day one of the SEC Media Days. And we'll share their thoughts as we continue on in the Y'all Show in our final hour is when we're going to scoot that information across to you. Plus, in our final hour, I've got info coming out of Knoxville, as over the weekend, we found out that the UT football program must vacate all 11 wins from the years 2019 and 2020. That was when Jeremy Pruitt was coaching on Rocky Top. But they're as bad as that is, that Tennessee must vacate all those wins. Tennessee avoided a postseason ban. But they did get an $8 million fine. So I'll tell you a little bit more about that developing story from the University of Tennessee in our final hour as we have our sports coverage there. When we come back on Y'all, though, we're going to have a good time because we're going to discuss with you accents and the various accents you find here in the South. As we found this off of the social media outlets, and people were discussing the country accent, the Old South accent, and the Appalachia accent and more, we felt like this is a perfect opportunity for us to pull up some examples and let you hear, if you don't know the difference in these so-called dialects of the South, we will let you hear that. And it's going to get fun. It's going to get entertaining. And I think fun and entertaining are kind of the same. Maybe that's a different variation of the accent there. But it's going to be educational in addition to being fun. And we're going to have a good time telling you all about that when the Y'all Show comes right back here. Again, you can drop us an email when you have the opportunity, y'all. M-A-I-L, mail@y'all.com. We'll be right back. Too long there. We're back here on the Y'all Show. Oh, yeah, we are Southern, and we are so proud of being Southern, and that comes with the pride of our region that we live in, the food, the culture, the history. And here in the South, we love our accents. And some people around the country laugh at our accents, but you know what? We laugh at them, too. May not be outwardly laughing at them, but internally, yeah, we laugh at those Yankees and those people from out west. And so here at the South Show, the Y'all Show, we have no problems accentuating our accent. And in this segment we call hashtag Huddlebaloo, Buzznet's really going to help us accentuate our accents because they've got a tweet that caught our eyes here at the Y'all Show. And Buzznet, which is all things internet, has put out the following tweet. Americans come in all different shapes, sizes, and accents with varying lingo. From the dropped T of the Northeast to the like Valley Girl accent of the West, there is no one way to say anything in the United States. Did we get it right? That's what their question is. And so this is a fun little tweet that they've got out. And the tweet has a map. The map has a map of the lower 48, and it's color-coded with the various accents within the United States, the styles of accents. I'm going to focus on the three major Southern accents in a second. But I do want to point out that this map's got the Valley accent of Southern California is one of the accents. It's got the Western accent. It's got the Midwest accent. I guess there's a difference between a Midwest and a Western accent. They also have the Canadian accent that is found up in Wisconsin and Minnesota. And, of course, they've got the Northeast accents that you'll find in Pennsylvania. They even have specifically a New York accent. And, yes, there is a definite New York accent. And then the New England accent is pretty amazing, too, for a Southerner to laugh at least. The Bostons and the Pock and the Kai and all that fun stuff. Let me tell you about a couple of the Southern accents that this BuzzNet post is all about. They have three major ones for the South that I want. Really, they've got four major ones, but I'm going to focus really on just a handful of these. They've got a Texas accent, which they include Oklahoma and Texas on that one. Then they've got a country accent, which is essentially Alabama, Mississippi, half of Tennessee and Kentucky, and all of Arkansas and most of Louisiana. That's the country accent. And then the other portions of the South that they've got broken down to are the Appalachian accent and the Old South accent. They've got the Old South accent over in the Carolinas, portions of Georgia and Virginia. The Appalachian accent is where the Appalachian Mountains are, essentially from Atlanta all the way up to West Virginia. That swath of mountains, they've got their own distinctive accent. Then they also have the Bayou accent that you find in Louisiana, which I love that accent. But it's not a major accent. So I'm going to break down a little further, if you don't mind, a couple of these other accents that they bring up here. And I've got some audio samples that I'm going to play for you here to help identify and help us kind of have some fun hearing what these differences are. So the first one is that Appalachian accent. And we're going to go to what I call Graham County, North Carolina. You're going to hear this person, the audio of this person from that county talking in a second, and they pronounce the word G-R-A-H-A-M quite different because, again, they've got an Appalachian accent, and I'm not Appalachian, evidently. So here's our first of the couple examples that we got, an example of the Appalachian accent. Let me hear what y'all think, and maybe you have you've got that great Appalachian accent yourself, and you are sitting there thinking, huh, that's the way I talk.
Everybody hears about Graham County, don't they? How good the people is, how they'll help you. I run into people I don't know, never seen them in my life, and I help them any way I can. Somebody said one day, said, you'll get knocked in the head. I said, well, if I do, I'm just knocked. They're just good-hearted. Everybody you meet, just 99% of them. If I didn't live here, I'd move, wouldn't you?
Where you want to go on vacation?
If I was going to go on a vacation, I'd just stay right on you. Oh, yeah.
All right, that is a guy from, as he called it, Graham County in North Carolina. The Appalachian accent example, as we're talking about the different variations of the Southern accent in the South, courtesy of BuzzNet today. That's a great example. I know, evaluating myself, I don't think I talk quite like that guy. I'll tell you what, the next guy has got one heck of an accent. The late guy, I should say. I grew up watching this fella on TV. I bet you a lot of you did too. And when I saw this guy start showing up on television somewhere around 1977, my local NBC affiliate started carrying this guy's reports. When I saw him, I heard Texas. So here is a interview done before he passed away with the late Dr. Red Duke. Y'all remember Red Duke? And here is an interview he did that I think when I hear Red Duke, I think of Texas and I think of the Texas accent. And so here is an example of the Texas accent courtesy of the late Dr. Red Duke.
And there's a lot more to taking care of a patient than an operation. And it's also one of the things you'll hear is that, well, how's the gallbladder doing? The gallbladder, former gallbladder, or where it used to be, is really a whole human being, not an operation, not an organ. You know, these are fellow human beings. We're all alike. We're a little bit, although it's a little bit different, but we all have the same feelings, same fears, same concerns, and then a little variation.
All right, that is an example of the Texas accent, and that comes to us from James Red Duke, Dr. Red Duke, who you might remember if you happen to live in a market where his reports came on, the Dr. Red Duke's Health Reports. That aired on local TV stations in America for about 15 years. And it was always just a great thing to see him there on my local affiliate. We lost Red Duke back in 2015. He was a trauma surgeon and professor at the University of Texas Health Science Center in Houston, Texas. And he was born in Ennis, Texas, and ended up going to Texas A&M, graduating from TAMU back in 1950. He was actually a Yale leader for the Aggies and ended up going to medical school and more, and had a long, long medical career in the state of Texas. But for many of you out there, you know him from those health reports that might have aired on your local affiliate. The Texas Cowboy Hall of Fame inducted Dr. Red Duke back in 2010. Love that voice. Dr. James Red Duke. And we had him on today's Y'all Show as an example of the great Texas accent that you might have heard him say, but maybe some other people from the Lone Star State. And this map, according to BuzzNet, includes Oklahoma with a Texan accent. So I've given you the example of the Appalachian accent. I've given you an example of the Texan accent. Then they've got, for the South, the Bayou accent. I don't have an example of that, but I think we could kind of figure that one out. It's a great accent. Love our South Louisiana accents. They're just awesome. Love their music. Then the dominant accent for the South, according to this map, I don't have a copy right here, but I don't think this is too hard for you to envision and hear this yourself. You might certainly have this accent. They call the country accent the dominant Southern accent. The country accent, according to this map, covers most of Louisiana, most of Florida, most of Georgia, almost all of Alabama, all of Mississippi, the majority of Tennessee, except for the Appalachian accent, which is over in the eastern portion of the state where the mountains are. And this also includes the country accent, the Boot Hill of Missouri, all the way over to Springfield, and then western Kentucky, part of the country accent of the South. So if you're in those states, you not only have a Southern accent, you can take pride that you got what they call here the country accent. See, you got a little country in you, and you didn't even know it. So that leaves us with one final Southern variation. And that great Southern variation that I do have a great example of is what they call the Old South accent. And this audio sample I'm going to play for you is the voice of Senator Ernest Fritz Hollings. He was a U.S. Senator for South Carolina for decades, and he was from Charleston, born and raised, except when he served in Washington, D.C. And Senator Hollings died about 5 years ago, but for a long time he was South Carolina's junior senator because he served with Strom Thurmond. But boy, did Fritz Hollings have one heck of a low country brogue. And I used to tape when he would be on C-SPAN. I used to record Fritz Hollings talking before the U.S. Senate just so I could hear that accent. So this is actually a 60 Minutes feature from back in 2004 where Mike Wallace went and interviewed Senator Ernest F. Fritz Hollings of South Carolina, Charleston's own, my fellow Citadel graduate, my fellow Lutheran, and South Carolinian too. Here's the late Fritz Hollings' voice. Man, I love this thing. Listen, I think you're going to like, again, Fritz Hollings. He had one heck of a voice, y'all.
When I got up there, it was hardly a breakfast or an evening reception. Now there are three breakfasts, three receptions. Now, on Fridays, we don't work. We're back home on fundraisers. You got to collect money.
You mean
all of
this is about money?
Yeah, this is all about money. There ain't any question.
Give me the numbers.
Well, in my last campaign, and 6 years ago, it was $8.5 million. That factors out to about $30,000 a week, each week, every week, for 6 years. So if I miss right at this time, Christmas week or New Year's week, I'm $60,000 in the hole. I got to hurry up and start playing catch-up ball.
The cancer on the body politics, Mr. President, is money.
I told you, was that not one heck of an accent? And that's what I'm talking about. I think that's how he said about Ernest Hollings, the late senator out of South Carolina. And boy, what a great accent. And according to this map that we were telling you about from BuzzNet. That would go down in the Old South Southern accent. Love it, love it, love it. We're going to get out here and go to the house, as Ernest says. No, actually, we're just going to take a break. It is the end of our first hour. We got two more hours of Southern greatness coming your way, so enjoy right here the Y'all Show. We'll be right back. The Y'all Show, where we accentuate the South, is back for another hour on this Monday. Hope y'all are doing great. You can email us here at y'all anytime. Our email address is mailmail@y'all.com. Coming up here in our hour, we've got lots of history to tell you about, some Civil War history, a big battle, at least in terms of Hollywood movies happening this day in history. We'll tell you about that in a battle that's got a direct connection to your boy, the General of the South, John Rawl. I wouldn't be here without that battle. We'll tell you about Battery Wagner and that 1863 just bloodbath that happened this day in history, plus other Southern history news. And we've got maybe one of the most famous Southerners in all of the world having a birthday today. I'll tell you about Mr. Knight Rider himself. All that is part of our Southern History Spotlight. And before the hour is up, we've got a recipe to tell you about. Have you ever cooked hamburgers and then dipped them into some broth, some beef broth? If you haven't, you might want to give it a shot. I found that out the hard way in church on Sunday. And I was a bad boy. I was a sinner. I was a hamburger sinner because I had one of those burgers and didn't even realize I'd had it. That's pretty bad, y'all. We're going to tell you about how to do that yourself. I got a recipe. I'll share it with you. It's part of our Southern recipe of the day coming up here in this middle hour of the Y'all Show. Plus, we've got coming up in hour three today, Megan Headwall. She's going to stop back by here. Megan's going to be on to tell us about her Michigan vacation. Our goal is to keep Megan right here in Dixie and maybe have her go to a Michigan vacation and never leave the South. That's my goal, and I'm going to share some of the fun of that Michigan via the South vacation in our final hour of today's Y'all. So we also have Southern sports to pass along in that final hour, including the University of Tennessee having to pay big money, having to vacate wins from the Jeremy Pruitt era, but they're not getting a bowl ban, not getting a postseason ban on Rocky Top. I'll let you know about that, plus speaking of the SEC, today marks the beginning of SEC Media Days in Nashville. So we'll have a preview of what you might can expect on day one of SEC Media Days in our sports report coming up in our final hour. Let's dive into the headlines here for hour number one, or rather hour number two of our Southern conversation, as we got a tragic story coming out of Georgia over the weekend. Four people were killed Saturday in a murder that was not a murder-suicide because the shooter actually left the scene. Then there was this big manhunt for this man. And on Sunday, authorities south of Atlanta were able to track down the suspect. A shootout ensued. Two officers were hurt during the encounter. But law enforcement officials shot and killed the man wanted in the weekend killings of four people near Hampton, Georgia. As a spokesperson for the Henry County, Georgia Sheriff's Department said that Andre Longmore, the suspect, was fatally shot during a widespread search for this 40-year-old man. The manhunt began shortly after the shootings on Saturday morning in a subdivision of Hampton. And then this search ended up spilling over into nearby Clayton County, Georgia, where Sunday, law enforcement shot and killed Longmore. Two deputies from the Henry County Sheriff's Department rather, let me correct that, a Henry County Sheriff's deputy and a Clayton County police officer injured during the attempt to arrest the 40-year-old Andre Longmore Sunday. But I think they're going to be just fine. The suspect there, Longmore, killed in the shootout after he is alleged to have killed four people Saturday in Hampton, Georgia. Elsewhere in our headlines from across the Southeast, Columbia, Tennessee, over the last couple of days, has been on edge after KKK flyers were found at black churches in Murray County, where Columbia, Tennessee is. And we told you about this last week on our show. The good news is, within 24 hours of those flyers being discovered, two suspects now in custody, and they're in the Murray County Jail, according to records there. A 38-year-old unnamed man and a 17-year-old both arrested. And they're facing civil rights intimidation charges. So the good news is they were able to find them. You know what? I saw the video of this thing. It's rather easy to find these people. The way they pulled up and left a flyer, there's video clear as day of one of the suspects posting this on what looks like a trailer like you would pull behind to serve concessions out of. And he shows up plain as day. Very well done, the cameras at this church, evidently. And the guy, that looks like it's the 17-year-old that gets out of the car and does this. Just absolutely stupid. Nothing to come of it. The good news is the community, which was on edge, can rest assured knowing that the local law enforcement, they did take this seriously and they were able to find these two. And it looks like these were the two, but we'll see what the scales of justice have in mind for both of these men, the man and the teen arrested for distributing KKK flyers in Columbia, Tennessee. Jason Aldean is doing a little bit better after over the weekend performing at the Xfinity Theater in Hartford, Connecticut. Aldean ended up having a heat stroke on stage. At one point during Jason Aldean's performance, he appeared to struggle to sing and ended up running off stage. The venue there in Connecticut confirmed that the show would be rescheduled to an undetermined date and that Jason Aldean is doing just fine. Temperatures, by the way, there in Hartford, Connecticut, temperatures reached a high of 89 degrees. And Jason Aldean, the Georgia boy, the Nashville area resident, having a tough time there with that outdoor concert over the weekend, which reminds me, the South, for the most part, over the weekend, had a pretty good couple of days weather-wise. It was the Northeast and the West that was in, they were the ones in the news this weekend. The Northeast had tremendous flooding. I know in New England, there were massive floodings, and that stretched down into Pennsylvania. In fact, a family from Charleston, South Carolina, vacationing there in Pennsylvania, got into some floodwaters, and at least one member of that family drowned as their car hit the floodwaters there in that portion of the Commonwealth of Virginia. So our thoughts there to that family, more coming from that developing story. The story out west is intense heat with 110 degrees plus reported in a large portion of the west. The south, for the most part, had a pretty easy going of it this past weekend. So we can all be thankful for that. I'll tell you later this hour when I get to talking about southern food that I got invited to a church picnic Saturday. Right in the middle of the afternoon. And guess what? The temperature when I was out there was in the low 80s. And it was in a covered pavilion, thank goodness. But even the temperature cooperated, not just being under the covered pavilion. The temperature was very, very nice. I didn't have one sweat drop after being outside for like 2 hours at this picnic. That's pretty impressive for July, if I must say. Had to dodge a couple of potential thunderstorms that were on the horizon. I'll tell you more about that picnic. Again, that's the subject of our recipe talk here later on this hour. But we wish Jason Aldean the best. Another singer in the news, if you want to call it singing, I probably should revise that. Let me strike singing from the record. Another guy that performs, Ice Cube, the former member of NWA, the rapper, and the guy that's been in movies and such. Ice Cube talking trash about Memphis's FedEx Forum. And the reason he's doing that is he helped put on the Big Three basketball event there in Memphis this past weekend. And Mr. Cube vented his frustration at the arena. He put up a couple of tweets. Here they are. Take it for what you think here. The first Ice Cube tweet said, and he doesn't spell FedEx right, by the way. He spells FedEx F-E-D-X. I guess that's good news for FedEx. But here's Ice Cube's original tweet. The FedEx Forum and Ticketmaster should be ashamed of themselves on how they've treated the Big Three, that's the basketball tournament, how they treated it in Memphis. Posting that our games were basically sold out when it was plenty of good seats left. And then he puts the word dirty. So it sounds like he's got an axe to grind with the people that run the FedEx Forum because they, I guess, sounds like they were pushing that the thing was a sellout or close to a sellout. So people didn't try to get tickets to this Big Three basketball event. And there must have been a bunch of empty seats in the FedEx Forum. And that made Ice Cube melt. He at least had an Ice Cube meltdown. So he followed that tweet up later with another one saying via Twitter, "Thank you, Memphis. We had a great time. FedEx Forum, thanks for nothing." I think we're probably going to see some legal maneuvers from different parties on this one. As of this show today, I can tell you that the FedEx Forum has not yet responded with a public statement. I'm sure they will. They're getting trash talk by Ice Cube. Can't have that. So the summer, sadly, is winding down. And if you're still looking for that perfect beach trip, I've got a recommendation. I've got a recommendation that you can go to your good southern beach with Fido right beside you. AL.com has penned an article, Warren Culo wrote this, about the best dog-friendly beach in Alabama. Now, the good news is they're all down on the Gulf Coast. They're not going to be a beach up on the Tennessee River or Pickwick. That's not considered a beach here for this article. So I think they used the website veterinarians.org to help come up with the options for their best beaches for dogs in Alabama. Now, some of these sites include the Fort Morgan Historic Site, the Dog Pond at Lake Shelby, that's in the Gulf State Park. You can find that. The Mayday Park, that's in Daphne. Pirate's Cove, that's a popular restaurant bar that has its own beach and is dog friendly. That's a good option. Gulf Shores Dog Park is a good option too. But the one, according to this website, that gets the most love is going to be Dolphin Island Public Beach. It's the main tourist beach on Dolphin Island, and it gets the award as the state of Alabama's most dog-friendly in this listing of the top dog-friendly beaches in Alabama. What I would suggest, beach lovers and dog lovers, is to go on your own ranking and come up with your own breakdown of the best dog beaches in Bama. Because the truth of the matter is, they're all within about an hour apart from each other. Now, you might have to get on a ferry and scoot over from Dolphin Island over to Gulf Shores, which is not hard to do. What is that, Fort Morgan? I've not been on that ferry before. I'd like to try that sometime, going across Mobile Bay there. But from right there near Orange Beach, you've got a couple of really good options, according to this map. And then the most northern option is one up there at Daphne, as I was telling you, that they've got in Daphne, the great dog that's the Mayday Park located in Daphne along the shores of Mobile Bay. And Mayday Park offers walks along the beach boardwalk for your favorite dog. So, yeah, if you're still trying to squeeze in another beach trip or you haven't quite been and you want to take your dog, L.A. might be calling your name. That would be Lower Alabama and the dog parks of Lower Alabama. Our last headline of this hour is one that I'm going to have to try to do with a straight face. I discovered this thanks to an article out of Kentucky. Manchester, Kentucky's Tristan Bolin is a three-year-old young man. I mean young man at 3 years old. But Tristan Bolin has a mullet. And Tristan Bolin is trying to become the champion of the USA Mullet Championship. It started as a rat tail that curled at 1 year old, and now Tristan Bolin at 3 years old is trying to become the champion of the best mullet for a kid in all of the world. And so there is a competition that you can participate in. And I went to the website for this thing, and the competition kicks off today. It's the USA Mullet Championship. Actually, it ends today. I need to get the winner when they determine this because round one of the USA Mullet Championship concludes on this July 17th. And they've got various categories. So I ended up going to the website to learn more about this. It's mulletchamp.com. And it is a very professionally done website that has information on how you can sign up for events. They've got literally in-person contests going on. They have various championships at state fairs like in Illinois and Indiana, but they got the Denim Fest contest coming up. If you have it registered, you should. Then they have what's cool is they've got the all-digital contest. And they've got the Teens Mullet Digital Contest that's going on. They've got the Kids Mullet Digital Contest. I assume that's what our Kentucky kid, the three-year-old Tristan Bolin, is signing up for. I'm assuming you send beautiful photos of your beautiful mullet, and that's how they can look at it digitally and determine who's got the best mullet in the competition. But they've got also online contests. How about this one? The 2023 Fee Mullet Digital Contest is going on. That's women with a mullet. And you can sign up for that at mulletchamp.com. I think they have some pretty cool prizes if you end up winning this thing. And the neat thing is, if you go to mulletchamp.com, you actually can see some of the great contestants and their mullets. And they even have nicknames for the style mullet that these people are sporting, like Blair Sugarman. She's got the Trapper Keeper mullet going. How about Kaylee Van Acker and her Ladybird She Mullet? Holly Gibson's got the Double Take She Mullet, where half of her head is blonde and half of it is black. Then we move over to the Kids Mullet competition. How about Jordan Childress's Pops Redo? And it really does look like something out of 1987. This kid, who looks like he's probably 4 years old, got the denim jacket on, too. Is this child abuse, is what I'm asking here? How about Nash Carroll and his Warrior mullet? And, oh, the legendary red mullet sported by Wyatt Lee Chamberlain. And, yeah, he's got red hair, holding his little puppy. So if you're into mullets, you need to check out mulletchamp.com. They even have a shop at this website. And check it out. I think, unfortunately for kids, it's too late. It says here on the website, registration for kids and teens competitions are now closed. But it's a fun thing. Check it out. And if you've got a mullet now, you have a great way to sport that mullet and maybe pick up a championship along the way. Only in the South, only in America, do these things happen. And only on the Y'all Show do we tell you about some of this great fun, like mullet championships in July. I don't quite qualify. I've not really, maybe for about a week, you could say I had a mullet way back in the day. And I'm talking right after college. So that's been a couple of decades. But hey, if you've got that mullet, it's time for you to make it pay off and show off to the world that you're a mullet champion. When we come back on Y'all, we have our Southern History Spotlight. We're going to tell you about a big Civil War battle that happened this week in 1863. And Mr. Knight Rider got a birthday. I'll tell you all about David Hasselhoff out of Maryland. All that's coming up when the Y'all Show continues.
They speak highly of your name, 'cause you fought all the way, Johnny Rip, Johnny Rip. You fought all the way, Johnny Rip.
Johnny Horton, little Johnny Reb, here on the Y'all Show. Time now for our Southern History Spotlight. And our History Spotlight today is a little personal for yours truly, John Rawl, because this spotlight includes that today in history was the Second Battle of Fort Wagner, and that was at Charleston Harbor in Charleston, South Carolina, when this 1863 battle happened on present-day Morris Island. Although, technically, where Fort Wagner was located, the Atlantic Ocean has kind of claimed that, and it's out there underwater now. You really can't even go to the site of this fort. Morris Island is barely hanging on itself there, just off of Charleston, South Carolina. But in 1863, this battle happened, and this battle was made famous by the 1989 film called Glory that has a bunch of A-listers in it. Matthew Broderick's in there. Denzel Washington is in there. It's about the story of the 54th Massachusetts, the U.S. colored troops, their regiment that fought in the Civil War, and they fought against Confederate forces at Battery Wagner in 1863, and it was actually a Confederate victory in 1863 there at this battle. The Northern troops were under the command of General Quincy Gilmore. The Confederate troops under the command of three different commanders, General P.G.T. Beauregard, yes, General Beauregard, the famous Civil War general. For a long time in the Civil War, he was overlooking the Charleston campaign. So he was still in Charleston when this battle happened. And also, William Taliaferro of Virginia was one of the Confederate generals. And then the guy that would become a general, or rather a governor of South Carolina, a Citadel graduate, and the football stadium at the Citadel is actually named after this man, Johnson Haygood, one of the other leaders of the Confederate forces at Battery Wagner. The amount of troops, the Northern troops had 5,000 troops against 1,800 men in gray. And among those 1,800 Confederate troops were privates J.E.W. Kaminer, my great-great-great-grandfather, off of my grandma's side, and in the same exact company, Company K, 20th South Carolina Infantry, was my great-great-two-great-grandfathers and my hero, Private Philip I. Rawl, Company K, 20th South Carolina Infantry. And both of those guys whose descendants would end up marrying each other, fought alongside each other in the Civil War, and they fought at Battery Wagner. Again, a Confederate victory, which Confederate victories didn't happen every day in the Civil War. The losses from this battle, you had 246 Northern troops killed in the assault on Battery Wagner, and you had 36 Confederate troops. And as depicted in the movie Glory, where U.S. colored troops stormed the fort, a lot of losses. In fact, Robert Gould Shaw, of which Matthew Broderick's portrayed Colonel Robert Gould Shaw, the 54th Massachusetts, he was killed in that assault in 1863. But this battle happened on this date in history, Civil War history, Battery Wagner, just off of Charleston, South Carolina. The unbelievable sadness of this battle and, frankly, the Civil War was that all these people were killed when this battle happened July 18th, 1863. There were a total of 1,500 federal casualties. There were 174 Confederate casualties as a result of the second assault on Fort Wagner. And the irony of all that is that within 24 hours after the Confederates won this hard-fought battle, they literally abandoned the fort and snuck back across Charleston Harbor. And within months, both of my Confederate ancestors that fought inside the fort and successfully thwarted the Yankee effort, they would ultimately abandon Charleston and would go on to Virginia and fight to try to save Virginia from a Northern victory. My ancestor, Rawl, actually got captured in the Shenandoah Valley in 1864 and ended up being a prisoner of war. I don't think my other grandfather got captured. Both survived the war, and now both ended up, one of them had a very short life after the war. I assume he probably had a tough battle and died within 5 years after the Civil War. But luckily for my sake, he had had children, and therefore my grandmother ultimately would be born. My grandfather, this would have been his grandfather in the Civil War that was the veteran. And Philip Rawl ended up having a great life. He ended up living close to, I think, 80 years old. He died in 1928. He actually died a year after his son, my great-grandfather, got killed in a car wreck. So that's always tough when you have to bury your own children, as my great-great-grandfather did. He died in the Confederate home, by the way, in Columbia, South Carolina. I have his New Testament Bible. I'm getting real personal here today, but hey, I'm talking about Battery Wagner. I have his New Testament Bible that he got as a prisoner of war at Point Lookout, Maryland. It's a great story. I'll have to fill you in on that sometime, but it was passed down to me by his granddaughter, who was a distant cousin of mine, and she knew about my love of Civil War and Confederate history and family history, and so she gave it to me, and I've got it safeguarded. But it's a neat remnant. In fact, that little New Testament Bible was the only thing my great-great-grandfather brought back from the Civil War, as again, he had been a prisoner. He was lucky to still be alive, but he ended up living a full life, and pretty neat. So, you know, the one reason I'm telling you this is because so many of us here in the South have similar stories. We just don't know them. And I only found out a lot of this story because I went and asked, and I was lucky when I was 23, 24 years old, that this woman, who was a distant cousin of mine that I really hardly knew, she lived with this Confederate grandfather of mine. She was his granddaughter. And she was about 20 years old when he died. In fact, she told me, I got it recorded. I have a recording I made of her back in the 90s when I went and interviewed her about her grandfather, my great-great-grandfather. And she told me that he had come to her wedding a week before he died. So she knew him well. And so I'm very fortunate to have that personal connection with Private Rawl, CSA. And a lot of us have similar ancestry. We have similar stories. We just got to go out looking for it. And I'm just fortunate that in my case at least, almost all of my family on both my mother and father's side are kind of in the same section of the South, literally the same county in most cases. It may be complicated if your family's been a bit of a mover and shaker in the last 170 years, but a lot of you still have roots right where you're living. And so please take time to dig up information. And another unbelievable plus, while I'm bragging on my Confederate ancestor, Rawl, he wrote down his experience of being a Confederate soldier, his being specifically a prisoner, in a book that I have a copy of. And it's a fascinating 30 pages that he wrote back in the 1890s. He wrote about his experience, and he was just a private. And I got lucky that I found that. And so the stories are out there, and oftentimes it's just something that you have to ask. You have to, it may be tough if you're a youngster finding somebody within your family who might know about a Confederate or Civil War ancestor, but those people that have connections to, let's say, World War II or the Great Depression or maybe the 1960s, they have stories to tell. They're not going to tell them in many cases unless somebody asks. And when someone asks, they oftentimes open up. And I'm so thankful that I had a distant cousin open up about her grandfather, my great-great-grandfather, and I have these great stories that are all true. I've got the book, I've got the Bible, I've got photos, and I would never have known it had I not taken a little initiative. And so please do that yourself, and you will be stunned what might be out there with your own family. Now, luckily, Ancestry.com can help out in a lot of cases. I don't have that pleasure. I didn't have that pleasure in 1994 when I was interviewing my distant cousin. But I had something better than Ancestry.com. I had her tell me about her granddaddy, including a little humor here. How, as a little girl, she'd get so embarrassed because they, you know, this is in 1915, perhaps. She's a little girl, and my great-great-grandfather gets up in the middle of the night and goes to the porch right outside of her bedroom and pees. And she said she got so embarrassed hearing him out there, this Confederate veteran, peeing outside of her bedroom window in the middle of the night. It was better than going out to the outhouse. But anyway, appreciate y'all letting me talk a little bit about Battery Wagner and my great-great-grandfather. As I said, kind of my hero. This week in history, we also mark the Apollo 11 and the lunar landing that happened back in 1969. This mission, again, out of Kennedy Space Center in Houston, changed the world with the three astronauts on board. And we'll never forget Armstrong, Collins, and Aldrin. And, of course, Armstrong being that lucky guy that got to go out there and set foot on the moon, the first human to ever do such a thing. The Apollo 11 mission happening this week with the lunar landing as well. And we've got to give a salute today to David Hasselhoff. David Michael Hasselhoff was born July 17th, 1952 in Baltimore, Maryland. Congratulations to David Hasselhoff. Now, he grew up, most of his childhood was spent in Jacksonville. He also lived in Atlanta. He attended Marist School. He got into Broadway and more and went on to be an actor. Most of us, like myself, grew up watching Knight Rider on NBC. That aired from 1982 to 1986. Michael Knight. Love that character. Love that car. And then Hasselhoff went on to be on Baywatch and has really become a cult icon, especially across Europe. They love David Hasselhoff. Maybe he needs to go over to Ukraine right now and help that thing come to an end. But congratulations. Happy 71st birthday to David Hasselhoff. What a career. What a career. And still active as far as I can tell. We are very proud of this Maryland, Florida, Georgia lineage of David Hasselhoff and the birthday kid. Well, that will wrap up our Southern History Spotlight here for this hour of talking about what's going on across the Southeast. When we come back, we've got some more fun. We're going to talk some food. It's hamburgers done in a way that not only did Pastor Presley not ever experience, but evidently I hadn't either until Pastor Presley told me about it sitting there on the back row of his church Sunday morning. I'll tell you that story when the Y'all Show Monday edition continues. We want to hear you here at Supertalk 93.1 on shows like The Y'all Show, The Patriot Pastor, and The Frankie Lack Show. We've got a text line that you can text us and participate in the program. That number, 731-410-7560. And the Supertalk 93.1 text line is powered by See Me Tree Service. They are a West Tennessee-based company, and they will help you with any of your tree removal problems, tree trimming, tree elevation, pruning, tree topping, stump grinding, and more. They're a small family-owned business that's licensed and insured, and you can call See Me Tree Service for a free estimate. Call them at 731-617-2236. See Me Tree Service. For all of your tree removal or tree issues going on, give them a call for that free estimate. 731-617-2236. See Me Tree Service, powering the Supertalk 93.1 text line.
Burgers and fries, cherry pies, it was simple and good back then. Walking in the sand, hand in hand, never thinking that it could end. Making our love with the moon above, it was burgers and fries and cherry pies in a world we used to know.
Tell them about it, Charlie. We're back on Y'all Talk with an Accent on all things Southern, and we're going to take you to a simple time now on the Y'all Show, and a simple time that includes burgers. We're going to keep the sides off to the side, Charlie. Hope you don't mind, but here on this section of the Y'all Show Monday edition that we kind of focus on cooking and food and recipes, I was inspired by my pastor of the week to tell you about this segment that we're going to talk food, because I got invited by the local church to their annual picnic Saturday. I'm not even a member of this church, but I've been there several times, like it, like the people, and they have a fairly new pastor. I've told you about him a couple weeks ago. He's kin to Elvis Presley. His name's Kurt Presley. And Kurt went out of his way over the last couple of days to remind me, hey, if you're able to, we'd love to have you at our church picnic. So it just happened to be that I was available Saturday afternoon, and I went out down to the county road where this was held and found the church picnic. They had about 50 people out there. Lovely setting. Temperature was perfect. Low 80s. I know about half the people there. Other people I did not know, but this is a really nice thing that they held there. And I went out there and had delicious burgers and hot dogs and chips and delicious dessert. And I really appreciate it there. Thank you, FPC, for your incredible hospitality, for having this old boy come by for a good picnic. And I'm not even a member. But they cooked a lot of burgers. As I said, they had about 50 people there. They must have cooked over 150 hamburgers. And they were delicious. Now, it wasn't until I was in church Sunday and Pastor Presley took a moment to thank all the people involved with helping put on this church picnic. And while I was slipping down the pew there, falling asleep probably. No, just kidding. I do get a little dozy there whenever the conversation is not that great. I do get a little sleepy. I apologize, Lord. Please forgive me. But I didn't get sleepy when they're talking about food, as they were talking about that at the start of church service Sunday. And the pastor was giving thanks to everybody. And Pastor Presley specifically mentioned that he had not had this broth burger that was served Saturday, and I had the same burger and didn't even realize it. So what happened evidently is Perry, the guy that did the cooking, did it in a way that when he finished cooking the burger meat, he put it into a beef broth and let it simmer in that. And then that's what was served to us. And I didn't even pick up on that. I guess I was too busy running my mouth. But Pastor Presley, it didn't get past him. So Pastor Presley, like myself, had never experienced a cooked burger that was then dipped in a broth. Then you put it on your bun and put on the ketchup and the mayonnaise and the lettuce and all the fixings to make it the way you want. Is this a common thing? I'm not sure. I'd never heard of it. Pastor Presley had not heard of it. But I did find, courtesy of the website justtakeabite.com, a recipe for Simple Supper Series broth burgers. Broth burgers in the South. And you cook them like you would cook anything. But what you end up doing is you let it simmer in this broth. And they've got their own broth that they make, evidently. That includes coconut oil, either chicken or beef broth, and then an onion put in there too. Now, at this church picnic, they specifically used a beef broth. But you cook the burgers, and then as they're either finished, or you could maybe put them in its own tray. I would probably put it in my own tray. You can add broth, this broth that you cook, and then you let it, with alongside the hamburger meat, simmer for about 3 minutes until the broth reduces and thickens. And then you serve on the side of the burger if you want to. In the tray that I got this stuff out of, I didn't even see anything that looked like broth, but it must have been done so well that it just kind of magically formed the burger meat, and it was good. Look, it's July, and you know what I did? Someone brought incredibly awesome garden vine-ripe tomatoes, the kind you only get in July. I loaded up my burgers, and I had two helpings, by the way. I loaded it up with tomatoes, so maybe that's why I didn't catch the whole beef broth part of this whole burger amazement that Pastor Presley had. But I know it was good. So again, I bring this up on the show today to ask the question, is this something fairly common in America, in the South, that we include a beef broth with our good old outdoor hamburger? This is not something we did in a restaurant. We were out at a outdoor place called Colonel's Landing, and it was a great place. It had a pond and the grass was freshly cut, a great little pavilion outside. It was truly a beautiful day to gather with people that you in many cases don't even know and have a good time talking. I got a chance to meet some people and tell them. They said, well, what do you do, John? I told them I'd do a show called The Y'all Show. So hopefully we picked up a few listeners. In fact, if you met me there for the first time and you're listening to today's show, I wouldn't mind you emailing me just so I can prove that people are listening from that church picnic. mail@y'all.com is how you can reach out to us. But I had a great time. And again, it's always good to commune and have a good time with great Southerners. And that's what we were able to do over the weekend. And I learned a new way to cook a hamburger. As big of a burger guy as I am, I found a whole new style of burger that might be worth trying. I don't have a good outdoor grill right now, so this might be something I have to cheat and do it inside. But how about that? And again, the website, justtakeabite.com, is where you can go and see if you can't master this beef broth burger. The beef broth burger option. And we can give credit to the First Presbyterian Church for their help in leading me to this concept of having broth with your burger. I think Charlie Pride, good old Charlie, would approve of this recipe. The late, great Charlie Pride with his song that we played starting out this segment, little burgers and fries and cherry pies. We had good desserts. We didn't have cherry pies there, Charlie, but we had a great time nonetheless. And again, thank you to everybody for their great Christian and Southern hospitality for letting me come to the picnic and then not kicking me out of church when I walked in there Sunday. And we had a good memory and learning all about new ways to cook burgers. And remember, a good burger is hard to beat. And he also pointed out, Pastor Presley, they got some kind of event at church this week. And guess what? They're serving up hamburgers. I think the same ones from this past weekend. Because they had at least 75 burgers that they did not use that somebody should have taken home and put in the fridge and they'll be available. Or at least they might can make meatloaf out of them or something like that. Whatever you do with leftover hamburger meat. That wraps up this hour of the Y'all Show. We got another hour. We're not going to talk about burgers in hour three. We're going to talk about Michigan, for God's sakes. Megan Hedwalla, she's coming on, and we're going to have a great conversation with her. It's our final hour on this Monday edition of the show that shakes the Southland. Our Monday edition of Y'all has arrived. I'm John Rawl, the general of all things Southern on this show that's shaking the Southland with its mixture of news, sports, gossip, food, travel, and a whole bunch of things all scooped in together. My fellow general of the South joining me for this final hour, and that's one Megan Hedwalla. And Megan, looks like you got your bags packed and ready to take off somewhere.
Just about.
Now, where do you think you're headed, Missy?
I'm going to head up to Michigan.
Well, we're going to do our best to stop you here in this final hour of the Y'all Show. We're going to take a Michigan vacation, Megan. Not with you, but we're going to have our own Michigan vacation and never leave the South. I'm sure you're sitting there thinking, what is he talking about? This guy's lost his mind.
I'm excited to find out.
Our intense research staff here has been looking hard at this proposition since we got your alert that you were going to be taking off for a few days to go to Michigan, of all places. And we thought, well, we would do our best to keep you from going to that Michigan when you could stay here and get a taste of Michigan and never leave the land of the South. So we're going to have some fun coming up in the next segment of the Y'all Show. Plus, today is the start of SEC Media Days in Nashville. This is the annual time that football coaches and players alike come in to Nashville from all over the Southeastern Conference. There will be four teams at the mic today: LSU, Missouri, and Texas A&M. And AL.com's got a preview of what you can expect on day one of SEC Media Days, and we'll share that in our sports coverage coming up in just a little bit here on Y'all. If you want to reach us here at Y'all, we have an email address that you're welcome to email anytime, and that's mail@y'all.com. It's real easy to reach out to us here. We'd love to get your feedback here. As Megan's constantly over there hitting the inbox and refreshing it and making sure that we don't miss anything. So let's send those emails on along, and we'll be happy to share your thoughts of what's going on across the South. Let's dive in to the news headlines of the day here on Y'all. And Megan, I thought the South kind of got off pretty easy this weekend from a weather standpoint. The news, weather-wise, from the weekend was what's happening up in New England and also out west. In New England, they've had a lot of flooding, and so much so that in Pennsylvania, a family from South Carolina, I think they were from the Charleston area, up there vacationing got caught up in some floodwaters, and at least one member of that family has already been found dead, unfortunately, there in the Pennsylvania area with the floodwaters. But the South got off pretty easy this weekend as compared to the last couple of weekends. I think the high and a large portion of the South peaked out in the 80s. So pretty good time to go out and lay out in the sun for your Michigan trip.
Absolutely.
Did you do that?
No, I didn't. I was working.
Do you ever lay out? Do you ever take time and lay out?
nope, I'm too busy.
I don't either. I don't either. I did take your advice, though, and go strolling the other day, and I noticed that the sun, you get a lot of sunlight when you're out there walking, in the outdoors at least. So the South, again, we our thoughts with that family out of South Carolina that unfortunately looks like at least one member of that family. There's some kids involved, too, in that developing story from the Keystone State. Elsewhere across the Southeast, how about this story out of Maryland? Five people shot near the Peace Cross Memorial in Bladensburg, and that happened after a funeral. People were leaving a funeral there in Bladensburg when the victims were shot. The shooting happened just before lunchtime or right at lunchtime in Bladensburg, Maryland. Five people were shot, were leaving a funeral at Fort Lincoln Cemetery when at least one person and another vehicle started shooting at their vehicle. Now, Megan, it's pretty stupid to be shooting anytime, but for God's sakes, at a funeral?
Yeah.
And I think we've seen similar headlines, I think also out of Maryland in recent months. So you have to wonder if gang activity might be part of the reason behind this, but unfortunate scene for sure from Maryland over the weekend. Also want to tell you, out of Murray County in Middle Tennessee, they have arrested the Columbia Police Department two people suspected of spreading KKK messages, as a 38-year-old man and a 17-year-old, both arrested, and they evidently were passing out KKK flyers at black churches in the Columbia, Tennessee area. And within 24 hours of these things being discovered, two people arrested, and we'll find out if they were the ones that were doing it or not. Also, a news story that ties into Middle Tennessee from the weekend. Country music singer Jason Aldean ended up suffering a heat stroke on stage while he was performing at the Xfinity Theater in Hartford, Connecticut, over the weekend, the highs in Hartford reaching 89 degrees, and Jason Aldean ended up having a heat stroke and appeared to be struggling to sing before he had to go off the stage. And the venue on Sunday confirmed that the show would be rescheduled to an undetermined date, and they added that Jason Aldean is doing well. So that gives us the opportunity here, Megan. It's not in your best health to go up north to Michigan. You need to stay down here where you're more acclimated to this part of the world.
Well, they'll have less humidity up there than what we do down here.
You think so?
I'd be a little, I know so. It'll be a little cooler.
All right. Well, if you have to go up there and you suffer heat stroke, I don't want you rescheduling like Jason Aldean. You're just going to have to tell them they're out of luck.
Okay.
Elsewhere in our news headlines. So Alabama is a good place to go to the beach if you're looking to go somewhere besides Lake Michigan this time of year for a beach. Alabama has got lots of good beaches, and they got dog-friendly beaches. The folks over at veterinarians.org has come up with a list of the top 10 beaches in Alabama to take your pooch, and the top beach that made the cut was Dolphin Island Public Beach. Other beach locations to take Fido include Fort Morgan Historic Site, the Dog Pond at Lake Shelby, River Sandbar Park, the Mayday Park in Daphne, and also Gulf Shores Dog Park. All of these, by the way, are those counties on the Gulf Coast, Baldwin on the Eastern Shore, and then Mobile County with Dolphin Island is got a couple of places where you can take your dog and have a good time if you're trying to squeeze in one last beach trip. I will tell you, have you been to Destin before?
I have.
Have you ever taken a dog to Destin?
I have not.
They do not like dogs in Destin. I know that from experience. So a lot of the Gulf Coast on the Redneck Riviera, if you will, they're very particular about having canines out on the beach. So, but it looks like Alabama's in some cases okay with it. And over on the Atlantic side, I've never had a problem with dogs. Not that I take them that often, but you see people exercising with their dogs each and every day on the Atlantic coast. But the Gulf Coast, those communities, some of them are pretty particular about dogs and the after effects, if you will, of the dog. And Alabama's got some good places. You can go to AL.com and pull up that article to learn more about how you and your favorite four-legged friend can have a great time in Bama. And lastly, Megan, have you ever considered entering this contest? Because if you've ever thought about it, you better hurry up and enter, because there's just a little bit time left to maybe enter round one. Are you ready for it?
What is it?
It's the 2023 Fee Mullet Contest. Do you have any idea what a fee mullet is?
No, I don't.
It's a woman with a mullet.
Okay.
Yeah, and so there's a contest. You can go to the website mulletchamp.com, and they've got all these digital contests. They've got a kids mullet competition, a teens mullet competition, and again, they've got their own female category going in addition to the so-called normal mullet competition. But there is this website that has probably a whole business model based on mullets, and it looks like a lot of fun. They even have pictures of some of the contestants. And if you've wanted, I know you would probably look really good in a mullet.
I don't think so. I like my hair too much for
and
that.
You got the red hair going too, in case y'all don't know what Megan looks like. She's got a beautiful head of red hair. In fact, there's a youngster that has entered the contest in the kids mullet contest. He's got a head full of red hair, and he has a nickname for his style of mullet. It's called the Legendary Red. That's what Wyatt Lee Chamberlain's haircut looks like. So I asked this question earlier. It's almost borderline child abuse for some of these kids and their mullets, in my opinion. I'm not a mullet kind of guy. But on that female mullet competition, there's plenty of competitors. So, Megan, if you have always wondered what you'd look like in a mullet, you might could win some big prizes thanks to mulletchamp.com. Not too late.
No, I'm okay. I'm going to pass on this.
All right. All right. Well, anyway, that's a great option. Again, we got to give credit to Tristan Bolin out of Manchester, Kentucky. An article written about him by the local news outlet there talks about how this three-year-old is entering the USA Mullet Championship. His hairstyle started with a rat tail that curled at 1 year old, and his family was all about him keeping that mullet look going. And at age three, he's got a chance to model that hair in a big way. He's actually won money for his mullet at the Chicken Festival in London, Kentucky. So you can make a lot of money off your mullet, and that's a great way to do it thanks to the website mulletchamp.com. So if you just happen to maybe think about changing that vacation plan, Megan, instead of Michigan, you can be thinking about mullets instead.
Okay.
Just saying. And that wraps up our news headlines for hour one of the Y'all Show. When Megan and I come right back, we're going to talk about going to Michigan, not for Megan's sake, but how we can go to Michigan and never leave the South. What in the world are we talking about? We're going to do our best to keep Megan right here amongst us when the Y'all Show Monday edition continues. Always a good direction to go, doing a little driving south. Thank you, Susie Vargas. We're right here on the Y'all Show. John and Megan having a good time on this Monday. Hope you all are having a great time as well on this show, powered by y'all.com, the South's homepage. So the other day, I got a little form passed along to me from our co-host, Megan, and it said, hey, here's my official vacation request form. I'm taking off starting after today's show. She's going to be gone for like a week and a half. And I'm thinking, you can't do that. You can't abandon me. And then I found out where she's going, and I really can't let her abandon us here at the Y'all Show, because Megan, your official destination you're heading to, you're not driving south for your summer vacation. You're driving the wrong way. You're heading north to Michigan. What is that all about?
I know. Well, I've got a good friend I'm going to go visit and spend some time with. We have our annual seafood dump, and it's that time of the year.
So you're going to leave us for Michigan, of all places.
I know. I am.
So I'm going to do my best to try to persuade you to stay here in the South. And I've got my own Michigan vacation all planned out for you. And you don't have to go up north. Does that sound like a good option? Are you at least willing to hear me out?
I'm willing to hear you out.
Okay. Because we want to keep you here. We don't want you going up there because, hey, you might not come back.
Oh, I'll come back. Don't worry about that.
You think so?
Oh, I know so.
So you know a fair amount about Michigan, the Wolverine State.
Yes.
So let me tell you how you can go to some great Michigan cities and never leave the South.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
So, do you know the biggest town in Michigan, what it's called?
Detroit.
Yeah, Detroit. Well, how about instead of going to Detroit, Michigan, you could head over to Detroit, Texas. Does that sound like a good trade?
Yeah, definitely over Detroit, Michigan. I wouldn't want to go to Detroit, Texas.
That is in Red River County. Population slightly less than the one in Michigan. 704 people live in Detroit, Texas. And it has a celebrity connection, as Detroit, Texas is the home of one John Nance Garner. I know you learned all about him growing up.
No, not really.
He was the 32nd Vice President of the United States, John Nance Garner, who served as FDR's Vice President. In fact, I didn't know this. See, you learn so much here on the Y'all Show. He was Vice President for two different terms of FDR, from when he first got elected in 1932. So he served in 1933. He served all the way up to January of 1941. This man from Detroit, Texas. And he lived until 1967. So it wasn't because he was in ill health that he had to leave the office. FDR switched out running mates with Henry A. Wallace in the 1940 election, I guess it would have been. And then in 1944, of course, Harry Truman was his running mate. But John Nance Garner, also known as Cactus Jack, the Vice President of the United States back in FDR's first couple of years in office, and he was from Detroit, Texas, that is. So that's one Detroit. Are you ready for not Detroit, but are you ready to go to Detroit?
Sure.
Because Detroit is in Alabama. I've not been to Detroit, but I've been within about 5 miles of Detroit, because Detroit is in Lamar County. That's northwest Alabama. That is right on the Mississippi line. And I've been down Hatley, which is Mississippi, Hatley-Detroit Road. That connects the two communities there in northeast Mississippi and northwest Alabama. And there you have Detroit, Alabama, population 247. And they don't have a former vice president that's from Hatley, or rather from Detroit. I apologize for not having that information available to you. But they've got great people. They may not have vice presidents there in that part of Alabama, but they've got good people that you will find.
And probably lower crime rates too.
You think?
Oh, I could almost guarantee it compared to Michigan.
and Hatley is right down the road over in Mississippi. But Detroit is not all that far from Hamilton, Alabama, which is on Interstate 22. If you're coming from between Birmingham and Tupelo, you'll find it. And I want to go to Detroit because guess what they have there?
What's that?
A Dollar General.
Everywhere's got a Dollar General.
I know. But they also have, how about this place? Now, I'm not giving you a restaurant review because I've not been there. I just like the name of this steak and fish place that you'll find in Detroit, Alabama. How about going with me sometime, Megan, to Detroit, or Detroit in this case, and enjoy a great meal, not alongside Lake Michigan looking out over Canada, but you can look out over the creek nearby at Woodpecker's Steak and Fish in Detroit, Alabama.
I do like steak.
Well, you can enjoy a steak in Alabama instead of the one up in Michigan if you'll go to Detroit, Alabama. So far, how are we doing on this?
I'm not sold yet.
Are you still maybe thinking about canceling your plans and staying here and going to Detroit and Detroit instead of that other Detroit?
Well, I'm not going to that other Detroit.
Oh, come
anyway,
on.
You're going to pay me to go there.
All right. Well, let's move on. Do you happen to know the capital of Michigan?
Lansing.
Oh, very good. Well, instead of going to the Lansing up there, up north, we can send you to Lansing up north and never leave the south. Because we can send you to Lansing up in North Carolina.
Oh, did not realize they had one in
Lansing, North Carolina. Population 126. And it is about as northeast, or rather, got my directions mixed up. It's about as northwest can be in the state of North Carolina. This is right where Tennessee, Virginia, and North Carolina come together in the mountains of western North Carolina. And Ashe County, North Carolina. And this town is north of the county seat of Jefferson, North Carolina. And it's Lansing, North Carolina, founded in 1928. It used to have a railroad that kept it pretty busy. They used to have a train that came through called the Virginia Creeper. And unfortunately, just like a lot of places, the railroad's not quite as busy as it once was. But back in the time that that guy from Detroit, Texas was vice president, Lansing, North Carolina was home of one of two cheese factories in Ashe County. So they made cheese, lots of cheese built. And the local high school was built by the WPA. And it's made out of granite stone. Also in that area, you'll find the Perry Shepherd Farm, which is on the National Register of Historic Places. And you'll find the Clark Miller Roller Mill, also known as Davis Clark Roller Mill. A roller mill in Lansing, North Carolina. And I know you're sitting there thinking, what's a roller mill?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what a roller mill is?
I don't.
It is a mill that uses cylindrical rollers either in opposing pairs or against flat plates, and it crushes things like grain, ore, plastic, and more. Roller grain mills are an alternative to traditional millstone or grist mills. So you probably didn't wake up thinking you're going to learn about roller mills, but guess what? You never know what's coming to you. In Lansing.
I didn't wake up thinking that I was going to learn about the North and the South.
No, you didn't. Well, you need to never. You just never know. Also, if you're in Lansing, North Carolina, another thing they're known for there, it's the home of Molly Chomper. And you're asking me what's Molly Chomper? Well, it's not a place that's just a sort of bourbon. Whiskey type place. It's a what they call a cidery, C-I-D-E-R-Y. I guess they make alcoholic cider here. And they purchase at Molly Chomper, they purchase 60 tons of fruit. They did that in 2022. So they purchase fruit. 93% of that comes from farms within 60 miles of the cidery. And they've got more than 64 apple varieties that they ferment. And they make good apple cider at Molly Chomper in Lansing, North Carolina. And some of the great options that they have, the fruit, they've got fruit coming in from all types of farms. They've got apples, blueberries, blackberries, raspberries, and they turn it into cider. And you can go to the website mollychomper.com and learn more about this cidery in the extreme northwest corner of North Carolina. As they say, drink good cider, support local agriculture. And that's out of Lansing. Not the one in Michigan, but the one in North Carolina. So are we still doing pretty good?
You're doing good.
All right. So another big town, and let me know if you've ever heard of this one. I didn't know about this town until I was looking up, and I never thought when I woke up this morning I would be looking up the population numbers for the state of Michigan. But thanks to you, I had to do this. So officially, the latest population numbers for Detroit, 620,000 people. The second largest city in Michigan, the one up north, that is. Do you know what town that would be?
I don't know, Lansing
Grand Rapids. Grand Rapids has 196,000. Then the third largest city in Michigan is called Warren. And Warren is just north of Detroit, the one in Michigan, not the one in Texas or Alabama. So Warren, Michigan has about 140,000 residents. So, Megan, instead of going up to Warren, Michigan on your vacation, how about go to Warren, Arkansas in Bradley County? Population 6,003. It'd be a little easier for you to get around in Warren, Arkansas.
Yep.
The section of Arkansas where this is located had a lot of American Indian tribes, had a Choctaw tribe that lived in that area. So it's got some good American Indian history. There was a railroad that once went to Warren, the Missouri Pacific Railroad. And it ended up being a boom in the timber industry in that area in the early part of the 20th century. In fact, the Arkansas Lumber Company had its headquarters in Warren, Arkansas. And they've got a lot of forestry there. During the 50s, more lumber companies came in. Timber and lumber continued to be important to Warren, Arkansas's economy. Although, unfortunately, they've lost a few of their lumber yards. Got a lot of great architecture, including Warren, Arkansas's Victorian Courthouse. As there you'll find the seat of Bradley County, Arkansas. And this location in Arkansas is in the south central portion of the natural state. It's only probably 30 miles from Warren, Arkansas to the Louisiana line. And it's not all that far from Greenville, Mississippi either. Down in the El Dorado portion of Arkansas, and got a lot of cultural events. You'll find the Bradley County Pink Tomato Festival each year in Warren, Arkansas. That's in June each year. And they've got the local school there, the Warren High School, home of the Fighting Lumberjacks. And that's a great thing to bring up, because not far from Warren and the Fighting Lumberjacks is the local University of Arkansas Monticello, home of one Senator Tommy Tuberville, who's making a lot of headlines right now. And Arkansas Monticello is home of the Fighting... Megan, I know you want to tell me what it is.
I don't know what it is. What is it?
Home of the Fighting Boll Weevils.
Would never have guessed that in a million years.
So a lot of cotton in that portion of Arkansas. That's the reason behind that. But Warren, Arkansas has a few famous people. Treylon Burks, football player out of the Tennessee Titans. He is from Warren, Arkansas. And also, I don't see anybody else's name that stands out, but good people found in Warren, Arkansas, much better than Warren, Michigan. Now, let me tell you about another option for you, as the Lake Michigan this time of year, a lot of people go to Michigan, frankly, this time of year in summertime, to go to the UP, right?
Yep.
And that would be what?
Upper Peninsula.
Upper Peninsula. Even people from the South sometimes go on vacations to Michigan, of all places, to go to the UP. Megan, I want you to go to the UP and have a great time.
They've got good fudge.
The one in the South. I don't know what they got in this UP from a food standpoint. But how about you go to our UP here in the South? Are you ready for this one? And it's got right there where this town is located. This UP's got a really hot spot for boating and fishing and fun on the water. Our UP, Megan, is Upper Parsons. Because if you go to Parsons, Tennessee, you can enjoy Kentucky Lake and all the fun that's there. UP, Upper Parsons in Tennessee. Now that sounds exciting, does it not?
It does.
Yes. So check that out. Upper Parsons. The town is actually just called Parsons. I gave it the upper name. But it's not far from the water. The Tennessee River is close by. And that's a lot better than that other Upper Peninsula that she likes to go to. So all of those are great places, right? We've got you sold.
You made a great case.
But there's one more I want to make sure I point out before we say goodbye to you for the week. So
What's that?
If I haven't done enough to woo you with all of these great city options, how about we find Michigan literally in the South? And we've done that. So, Megan, please don't go to that Michigan when you can go to our Michigan. And that our Michigan just happens to be Michigan City, Mississippi. Michigan City, Mississippi is right on the Tennessee border. It's right on Highway 7 in the north central section of Benton County, where Ashland is located. And I've been to this Michigan City. The Mississippi Central Railroad used to pass through it on the way to Grand Junction. Grand Junction, Tennessee is probably 3 miles up the railroad from Michigan City. And it's a great little spot there. They even had a Civil War battle in that area called Davis's Mills. And that happened in the Civil War. There's some good shopping. I've been to the Dollar General in Michigan City. A lot, actually. I've gotten gas at the gas station. They actually tried to gyp me one time there. And I was, I had to stay on them. But I got my money back. I got my money back after harassing them for like a month. But they did give me my money back. But I've recently discovered a really awesome place there in Michigan City, Mississippi. So far better than what you're going to find in the entire state of Michigan, you can find in Michigan City, Mississippi. And that would be Mid-South Ornamental. Mid-South Ornamental is located right on U.S. 72. And it is the home of some of the most impressive concrete sculptures going. And you can go there and buy them. You can buy them that they're painted. And I've bought several concrete structures from them. And they're heavy, but they're really cool looking. And they've got elephants. They've got alligators. They've got flowers. They've got a really awesome concrete sculpture they make there that's got a modern day U.S. soldier that's perfect for like a cemetery or maybe at a veterans monument. And it looks almost realistic the way it's painted, and they have their own staff there that paint these things. And I think it's very affordable too. Mid-South Ornamental, it's in Michigan City in Mississippi. And I think they got a website you can find some of their stuff, but great shopping. You just might want to bring a big truck to haul off that concrete stuff they make there, because it ain't lightweight. And you'll know when you find it, Megan, when you cancel that other Michigan trip and go to this Michigan City, because right when you turn off of the highway to turn into this business, they got a humongous elephant that's adorned in Alabama Crimson Tide colors greeting you when you pull off the highway there. It's pretty freaking big. I'm talking maybe 12 foot tall elephant roaring up off the ground, and you'll find that there in Michigan City, Mississippi.
Now, you know, John, you've convinced me. I think what I'm going to do is I will go on this trip to the state of Michigan, and then I'll take another 2 weeks off and tour the South Michigan.
The Michigan City.
I'm never coming back.
And then the Lansing. I mean, I'd like to go to that place up in North Carolina, that what they call a cidery. And I accuse them of making alcoholic cider. I don't know if they make alcoholic cider or not. They just might make really delicious cider. But they have a lot of different choices there in Lansing, North Carolina. And we want to thank our Detroits, both the ones in Texas and in Alabama, for helping Megan really, really think about this thing. Because
I'm going to be gone for 2 months now.
Now, you told me before we started
I'm never coming back.
You told me before we started this segment something about, what are they known for, food in that other Michigan?
Some food.
Yeah, but I thought I heard you mention it.
Well, no, I co-host a annual seafood dump, I'm going up there for that.
So,
yes.
So they have seafood in Michigan?
They do.
From the Great Lakes?
No, not necessarily.
Okay. So they have to bring it in from, let's say, Florida.
Maybe.
Or other things. Are you taking some catfish up there?
Nope, not going to take that. That's not part of our dump, but maybe some crawdads.
That would be a good thing to haul in your car if you're driving to that other place. Spend about 18 hours in the car with catfish and crawdads. And how about you getting pulled over on the way? And the cops said, lady, what are you hauling there? Are you a illegal
smuggling
catfish to the north? Well,
yeah, that would not go well.
We will let you slide this time since you've earned the right to go to Michigan. Maybe it will make you appreciate the South even more.
It does. It really does.
Well, have a great time. And remember that these other places that have Michigan connections in the South aren't all that bad either. Even our UP, Upper Parsons, sounds like a good place to go. At least take pictures, and we'll have to get your feedback on your other Michigan trip when you do make it South, okay?
That sounds great. I look forward to it.
Well, Megan, I don't want to hold you up. I know you're a busy lady packing right now, so why don't you go ahead and take advantage of abandoning us here for a couple of days and get your packing started. And we'll close out the rest of this y'all show without you, you darn Yankee traitor, you.
No, don't say that.
Well, have a good time and be safe.
All right. Thank you.
Right. Megan Hedwall, everybody, heading to that other Michigan. Had been a fun segment here. And if y'all have some other Michigan connections that we missed, feel free to email us here, and we'll embarrass her when she gets back. mail@y'all.com. We're going to wrap this Monday edition of Y'all Up. After we come back, we're going to talk about the SEC Media Day taking place day one in Nashville today. All that's coming right up. We want to hear you here at Super Talk 93.1 on shows like The Y'all Show, The Patriot Pastor, and The Frankie Lack Show. We've got a text line that you can text us and participate in the program. That number, 731-410-7560. And the Super Talk 93.1 text line is powered by See Me Tree Service. They are a West Tennessee-based company, and they will help you with any of your tree removal problems, tree trimming, tree elevation, pruning, tree topping, stump grinding, and more. They're a small family-owned business that's licensed and insured, and you can call See Me Tree Service for a free estimate. Call them at 731-617-2236. See Me Tree Service. For all of your tree removal or tree issues going on, give them a call for that free estimate. 731-617-2236. See Me Tree Service, powering the Super Talk 93.1 text line. Jimbo Fisher and three Aggies will make their way to Nashville today to be part of day one of the SEC Media Days. This is the Y'all Show Southern Sports Update, and indeed, it will be a great day to be an SEC fan as we've got 4 days of fun coming from Nashville, the first time Media Days has ever landed in Music City. Joining Coach Fisher will be his players, junior defensive lineman Fadel Diggs, senior defensive lineman McKinley Jackson, and senior wide receiver Anias Smith. Now, A&M will be joined today at the podium by two other SEC teams, as LSU will send players Jaden Daniels, the quarterback, Josh Williams, and Mekhi Wingo, representing the Bayou Bengals of LSU on day one. And then Mizzou and Coach Drinkwitz will bring along from Columbia defensive back Chris Drain, Javon Foster, and Darius Robinson, representing Mighty Mizzou on day one of the SEC Media Days. Now, AL.com has come out with five things to expect on day one of SEC Media Days 2023. And I'm going to go read what Craig Stevenson wrote all about here, giving you a preview of this AL.com article. And according to this article at AL.com, the day one expectation of the five things to expect, number one, plenty of future schedule talk. Yeah. Remember, it's on day one that the commissioner, Greg Sankey, gets up and kind of gives his state of the state address. And I know they'll get a lot of questions sent to him. But the SEC's got a dilemma. Are they going to keep it at 8? Are they going to go to 9 in 2025? They've already determined that it'll be 8-game schedule, SEC schedule in 2024 with the addition of Texas and OU. But yes, according to this article, there'll be plenty of future schedule talk on day one. Number two, another day one thing that will be hot and heavy right on Lower Broadway will be Texas and Oklahoma. Although they're not here, they might as well be. They're going to bring up, according to this article, a lot of discussion about the impending arrival of these two Big 12 schools that will be joining SEC Media Days next year. Number three, according to the AL.com article, LSU coach Brian Kelly, who will be in attendance on day one alongside his players from Death Valley. The Tigers won the SEC West, got over Alabama for the first time in a number of years with a dramatic double overtime victory. I think it was either two or three overtimes. They won. That's all that matters. Brian Kelly had a very good first year, except for the last couple of games where they kind of fell apart. But Brian Kelly, according to this article, has been on a months-long off-season bragging tour, and he'll have to be filling his oats, according to this article, about what to expect on day one. Also, number four on this list is A&M's Fisher, Jimbo Fisher, who will really talk fast but not say much. That's what they expect out of him, giving him the nickname in this article, the Aggie Auctioneer. I like that. That is a great, great nickname for Jimbo Fisher. The Aggies finished 5-7 last year, a horrible season for a guy that gets paid nearly $100 million in his contract. That was ripoff. He ought to be giving some of that money back. And the last thing they've got for day one, according to this AL.com article, deals with the other representative coming in on this first day, Mizzou, Eli Drinkwitz. Usually, Drinkwitz has something pretty alarming to say on these media days. It might be the most attention his football program gets each and every year when he's at the podium at media day. But oftentimes, he doesn't hold back voicing his opinions and takes shot at opponents while he's up there. According to this article, Coach Drinkwitz has a little bit of the Steve Spurrier, Lane Kiffin moxie. And so watch out for what he might have to say, including something about the NIL or the transfer portal. All these, again, five things brought up in the AL.com article, five things to expect on day one of SEC Media Days 2023. Go check it out right now. Now, back to some SEC news for a team that won't be at the podium for at least day one. The Tennessee Vols making news over the weekend. UT must vacate all 11 wins they got from 2019 and 2020. That's when Jeremy Pruitt was coaching that program, as Tennessee got a bunch of penalties handed down by the NCAA for recruiting violations. And this was announced by the school over the weekend. UT avoided a postseason ban, but they did get an $8 million fine by the NCAA, to be believed to be the largest fine levied in an NCAA infractions case. And they're on probation for 5 years. They will have a reduction of 28 scholarships for what happened when Jeremy Pruitt was coaching UT in 2019 and 2020. He was coaching there for three seasons, but these violations are specifically for the 2019 and 2020 seasons. The official record book will be changed to reflect that the Vols were 0-5 in 2019 and 0-7 in 2020. So that makes Jeremy Pruitt's final record at Tennessee 5-19. But a really, really ugly scene. In fact, Jeremy Pruitt did not receive any of his $12.6 million buyout, and he's declining comment, according to ESPN. Tennis wrapped up Wimbledon over the weekend, and congratulations to Carlos Alcaraz, the world number one, defeated Novak Djokovic, denying Djokovic the chance to win a Grand Slam for the calendar year 2023. It was a 4-hour, 42-minute match Sunday where the Spaniard defeated the 7-time Wimbledon champ Djokovic and Alcaraz wins his first Wimbledon title. That was on the men's side. On Saturday, on the women's side, you had a first-time winner. Congratulations to Marquita Vondrousova as she defeated a Moroccan, Anz Jabeur, or maybe she's from Tunisia. I apologize. She's North African. Defeated her. She was the first unseeded woman to win at Wimbledon with a 6-4, 6-4 win Saturday to win her first Grand Slam title, that from the sport of tennis over the weekend. And that wraps up our Southern Sports Blast for this final hour of Y'all Talk with an Accent on All Things Southern. Coming up on the Tuesday Y'all Show, you'll want to make sure you join us. We're going to have our friend Jerry Short back on here to talk about all things Takapola. He is our Takapola storyteller, so he'll be here to have a great time. We'll have full coverage of what happened on day one. We'll have some audio coming in from the coaches like Brian Kelly, Drinkwitz, and Jimbo Fisher that we'll be passing along as part of our Southern Sports Report. SEC Media Days recap coming up on the Tuesday edition. Plus, we have info on the new books hitting newsstands and the top sellers from the New York Times list. And our Southern Political Report also headed your way on the Tuesday Y'all Show. So we've got a full lineup of greatness on Tuesday, and we want to make sure you join us for that fun. Thanks again to Megan Headwall for being here in this hour of the Y'all Show, and we wish her well on her trip to that other Michigan. And you can catch a podcast of the show anytime by finding us at y'all.com. We're also available on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn app, Spotify, as well as Apple Podcasts and Apple iTunes. Just search for Y'all Show and you'll see us. So have a great day until we see you on Tuesday, or you'll hear from me Tuesday. Have a great rest of your day, y'all.